Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless. And it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with your remedies in the law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com. If we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure, better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR. The rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known purely for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of your remedies in the law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremedyisinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of that if it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a social network, though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and community. communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, and maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated to yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're on the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. Every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best. And believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call the board and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider. And even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Excellent.
All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to our speaker for this evening, Mr. David Merlin.
No, not Martin. It's Mike. It's Michael Edward. It's not David Merlin. It's okay. Anyways, what I want to share with you tonight is the little article here that I have put together. Why is it so hard to understand that there are state citizens and federal citizens and that the two occupy different political status? You can look at any version of a constitution you like and you'll see where the federal citizenships were created right there in Article 1. And as these federal citizenships are being created by the constitutional agreements, it's given that these people are not parties to the constitutions. They're subjects of the constitutions. We, the state citizens, union state citizens, created the constitutions. Our parties and our parties to the Constitution. We owed the services and own the services of the federal citizens, period. Even if the entire federal government collapsed, disappeared tomorrow, we in our states would still exist. And that's because our existence as political entities does not depend on the existence of the Constitution of 1789 and their service and contracts. We are the creators. They are the governments, the states, and the federal that we created. We're the, if you would, employees. They're the employee. We're the employers. They are the employees. Nothing created is ever equal to or greater than its creator. No employee gets to tell the employer what to do, although personally in my first life's work, I've seen them try. Even though you've taught this ugly fact, there has always been two minority citizenships in this country. Hold on a second.
I'm here, Mr. Edward.
You there? Can you hear me, Martin?
Yes. Yes, I'm here.
All right.
Yes, sir.
The ugly fact is that there have been two minority citizenships in this country created. Second-class United States British territorial citizenship and third-class citizenships of the United States, the municipal government. So now we have been misidentified accidentally on purpose as a dual citizenship carrying the weight of both these substandard citizenships and all their obligations. And I come to you and say, wake the hell up. If you were born in Minnesota, you're a Minnesotan. Why on earth are you claiming to be a U.S. citizen? And, you know, you stand there like sheep in the rain. United States citizens equals someone born in the British Commonwealth territorial United States, such as Puerto Rico, or they're a mercenary of the territorial armed forces or one of their dependents. Are you in the Army right now? There's a reason that a drill sergeant gets to treat you like a, quote, bum-sucking maggot, end quote. And it's because for the term and duration of your military service obligation, you are adopting the foreign United States citizenship associated with territorial government.
Oh, wow.
So do you want to be – hold on a second. We've got background noise here. Is that you, Martin?
Yeah, that was me. I'm so sorry. Thought I was muted.
Mute yourself out, please, until we're there. So do you want to be in the Army the rest of your life or like on endless KP duty? Or do you want to come home and enjoy the actual freedoms that you've earned or that you've inherited as a birthright? That's the difference, in a nutshell, between being a U.S. citizen and being an American Union state citizen or, as expressed in Title 8 of the United States Code, an American national. If you aren't in the service, the military service, and you weren't born offshore to foreign parents in the territorial United States, like Guam, American Samoas, et cetera, Puerto Rico, or for some obscure, unknown, unfathomable reason you are a masochist and just like being abused and taxed to death and not having any constitutional guarantees, then you are not a United States citizen. So why are you accepting that political status? Am I supposed to believe that nearly 350 million Americans like being treated like buck privates in the Army, in perpetual boot camp, trampled on and taxed to death and impersonated? At least the guys who are actually in service get a paycheck and some other perks and bennies, but you get none of that, and you get all the ugly parts, too. So why in heaven's name are you claiming to be a U.S. citizen? Why aren't you claiming your birthright, your political citizenship status as an American national instead? Same thing applies with municipal citizens of the United States. It doesn't have anything to do with you. If you weren't born in the District of Columbia to foreign parents or working for the federal civil service or living as a dependent of such a person, why on earth would you want to be dubbed a criminal responsible for paying for all the debts of the federal government and presumably guilty until proven innocent as well? Ever wonder why the municipal courts have a 96 to 98% plus conviction rate? It's because municipal citizens are guilty by definition. They're prejudged before they ever enter a courtroom. All that is up for discussion, really, is how long you're going to go be in jail and how much you're going to pay. If you're born in one of the 50 states, however, you are an American. You have constitutional rights, not mere civil rights. You're not any kind of U.S. citizen at all. Both U.S. citizenships are substandard and not covered by the constitutional guarantees, and that is the way it has always been since 1787. You have been intentionally misidentified. You've been purposely duped. You've been played, brother. You've been played. You've been used and abused and impersonated and stolen blind. Yet even when someone comes and gives you this information on a silver platter, most still can't grasp it. Most refuse to grasp it. If you love your country, it's time to come home and repopulate it. According to the liars, this is a country of 350 million public servants and no public to serve. According to them, you're all here, quote, providing essential government services, end quote, as unpaid volunteers, just residing here on a temporary basis. According to them, you are not Americans. You are a U.S. citizen. The same people that misidentified you as a U.S. citizen are poised to steal everything, and they do. Your country, your state, your identity, your lawful state citizenship, everything. They plan to do this without firing a shot, and they have done this without firing a shot, and they plan to also charge you for this service. They are the enemy within. They are the enemy's domestic, and they're gunning for you, yours, your children, and their primary weapon is just your own ignorance about who you are and what you are owed and by whom. Beginning with the fact that if you were born in this country and don't work for the federal government or get an unearned welfare check, you're not any kind of U.S. citizen. Follow up with the fact that they are your payroll. A United States citizen, in fact, is a corporation. Congressional record, June 13, 1967, 2 years before I graduated high school, pages 15,641 through 15,646, says in part, quote, a citizen of the United States is a civilly dead entity operating as a co-trustee and co-beneficiary of the PCT, that's the Private Constructive Trustee Trust of the United States Incorporated under the 14th Amendment, which upholds the debt of the United States of America and the United States Incorporated in Section 4, end quote. In People versus De La Guerra, 40 California, 311, 342. This is 1870, so it's less than a decade after the Civil War, quote, and says in part, it is evident that they, referring to U.S. citizens, have not the political rights which are vested in citizens of the states. They are not constituents of any community which is vested in any sovereign power of government. Their position partakes more of the character of subjects than of citizens. They're subject to the laws of the United States, but have no voice in its management. If they are allowed to make laws, the validity of these laws is derived from the sanction of a government in which they are not represented. Mere citizenship they may have, but the political rights of citizenship they cannot enjoy. The United States Code that uses American national while maintaining no such status in 14th Amendment as naturalized citizens of the United States is 8 U.S.C. 150, Section 1502. The Certificate of Nationality issued by Secretary of State for person not a naturalized citizen of the United States for use in proceedings of a foreign state. And it says, the Secretary of State is authorized to issue in his discretion and in accordance with rules and regulations prescribed by him a Certificate of Nationality for any person not a naturalized citizen of the United States who presents satisfactory evidence that he is an American national and that such certification is needed for use in judicial or administrative proceedings in a foreign state. Such certificates shall be solely for the use in the case of which it was issued and shall be transmitted by the Secretary of State through the appropriate official channels to the judicial or administrative officers of the foreign state in which it is to be used. Now, here's the question. Is Minnesota a foreign state to the United States? You betcha it is. So is Florida, Georgia, and all the other states in the Union. They're all foreign. In fact, they're foreign countries. As recently as 1958, when Alaska, being a territory, was translated into becoming one of the Union states, the Congress referred to Alaska coming in to join another country, to become a country of its own. In 19 Corpus Juris Circundum, Section 883, the United States government is a foreign corporation with respect to a state. 8 U.S.C., Section 1102A, Section 21. The term national means a person owing allegiance, permanent allegiance to a state. 8 U.S.C., Section 1101A22. The term national of the United States means, quote, a citizen of the United States or a person who, though not a citizen of the United States, owes permanent allegiance to the United States. So are you an American national or a national citizen of the United States? These are two distinct status within the American system. The former is a freeman. The latter is a voluntary slave subjected to the jurisdiction thereof created by Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. It's a federally created capacity state that owes allegiance to it. In Gardenia versus Board of Registers, 48 South 788, 169, Alabama. This is in 1909, so it's 104 years ago. There are two classes of citizens, citizens of the United States and of the state, and one may be a citizen of the former without being a citizen of the latter. Murphy versus Ramsey, 114 U.S. 15. This is 1885. Quote, federal citizenship is a municipal franchise domiciled in the District of Columbia, and the political rights of federal citizens are franchises which they hold as privileges at the legislative discretion of the Congress. U.S. versus Valentine, 288 F. Sup. 957, quote, the only absolute and unqualified right of a United States citizen is to residence within the territorial boundaries of the United States. Are you prepared to object when someone says, what is your residency? What's your address? I am. Wheeling Steel Corporation versus Fox, quote, therefore, the U.S. citizens of the District of Columbia residing in one of the states of the Union are classified as property and franchises of the federal government as an individual entity. Hendricks versus Maryland. A U.S. citizen upon leaving the District of Columbia becomes involved in interstate commerce as a resident, does not have the common law right to travel of a citizen of one of the several states. And you could just sit there and remove the right to travel and just simply say does not have the common law rights of a citizen of one of the several states. Cruikshank, there is in our political system a government of each of the several states and a government of the United States, each being distinct from the other and has citizens of its own. I mean, we can go on and on here. Point being, A U.S. citizen is a piece of property. If you read any of these old court cases prior to the Civil War, where slavery was the issue, the debate was always over property rights. Therefore, a U.S. citizen is a slave. The 14th Amendment defines what a U.S. citizen is. Section 1, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the states, of the United States. The so-called 14th Amendment criminally converts U.S. citizenship completely upside down. It inverts it from what the Founding Fathers intended. You're here to learn these differences. I encourage you to go to the website, oncewewerecolonists.com. Read it. Reread it. Print it out. Put it in the bathroom with you. Have something to hold on to as you read through these things. It's critical for you. All right. So let's see if GW has shown here yet.
I'm here.
He hasn't yet. You're here? GW?
I'm here.
Great. Welcome.
Yeah.
How was your week?
My week's been pretty good. Yeah, it's
great.
Been semi-busy, not too busy, and so just good. So anyway, the week's been good.
Share with us, please, what's gone on with you this week, and any comments that you may have, any updates that you may have.
Oh man, I try to think of things. I should mark them down because I always think of things and go, wow, I need to share that. And then get to 6 o'clock at night and I'm like, beat. But anyway, just trying to remember. We had the guy that. It's really, really important that you follow instruction and you follow our instruction when we're trying to help you through this process. I've got a guy that I finally had to let loose on him. Kept on asking me about. When he's trying to fill out his paperwork, especially the DS-11, kept on asking me all these different questions about other providers out there. And, he's watching all kinds of different videos. This is where we're at this time, Michael, in this process, is getting pretty popular and there is getting a lot of information. It's just that there's so much BS to navigate through that it's making it a little longer. My patience sometimes gets a little thin, I'll tell you that. But finally I just said, listen, he kept on second guessing every time I was telling him to do something. Just call back, ask more questions like, hey, listen, if you want to go and follow that other process, go and follow that other process. Okay? The main thing is we've been doing this. Well, I've been doing this for so long. Brother John's been helping people for many, many years, and some certainly people with special situations. And, if you want to second guess everything, don't expect for it to run real smooth. Had a guy actually really screwed up. And he got denied his passport. I mean, really screwed up. I don't want to go into it, but he lied. And they figured out his lie and, nailed him with it. And so, we've done this enough, anybody that's listening, we've done this enough to know the pitfalls and the ups and the downs. And, I guess that would be my statement for this evening about, because it really frustrated the heck out of me. And I've got to turn over a new leaf and just not let it frustrate me anymore and just go, ha ha, you know, okay.
Right.
You screwed up. You screwed up. You know, I'm not going to pay the price if you screw it up. All right. So, anyway. So this call, of course, is about correcting your status with the U.S. State Department, you know, through getting a brand-new passport, brand-new passport card. With that corrected status actually appearing not inside that little book or on the card itself, but actually being on the screen that the administrators will see when they're letting you pass through customs, when a judge looks you up, when a cop along the side of the road pulls up your information through that passport card. That's the information we're talking about getting corrected. There is a number of other types of correction processes out there that don't even have anything to do with this, believe it or not, and they call it getting your status corrected. It's not correcting your status with the U.S. State Department. The reason I say this, and there's other things, yes, you can do at other times and other points in your life, but for the most part, what we're talking about is a process where we're going to help you through that process and get your status corrected on a passport, you know, on the passport card, where it's going to reflect at the State Department level on their back screens. And that is, that's for when you travel. It really is nice. Okay. Plus it also puts you into a position where you have to kind of understand things a little bit better from the standpoint of some of the things that Michael was just talking to you about with these court cases. You talk about the difference between being an American national, having all your God-given rights secured to you, and being looked at or categorized as a franchise and a property. And so that's really what we're talking about here. So I will yield on that now. And hopefully, I don't know, but hopefully we might have some new callers on here that would like to ask some questions. And so we should open up the phone.
Okay, Martin, you want to take over?
Yep. Yes, sir. All right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2, if you have a question, you raise your hand and we'll unmute you one at a time. If you're listening on the Freedoms Radio side, type your questions in the question bar at this time. But don't forget to click submit. Don't hit the submit button. We won't see you. All right. On the call side, first we've got Mr. Ed in Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Mr. Ed.
I'm curious. You mentioned someone getting denied a passport. So I'm imagining them having gone through the process and done the affidavit and birth certificate, et cetera, et cetera. So when they're denied a passport, have they been denied their status, or are they just denied the passport? Does the denial of the passport reflect upon the status?
Well, okay, so the status, you know, your status, okay, is I would say is if you really understand who you are, and you wouldn't even really need a affidavit. But what I'm talking about is, you know, I was talking about getting, you know, the passport, and the passport card is what they were, of course, trying to acquire. So Ed, you're asking whether they can't deny their status or their status. Okay, that's something they're not going to do.
That's what I thought.
But yeah, they can't do that. It's impossible for them to do. And a judge is not going to do it. But they might have several different ways, okay, of trying to set you up to cover their butt, all right? In a jurisdictional situation or whatever. But anyway, yeah, it was just one of those things where, it was just a little frustrating because the guy was all, ticked off and mad and everything else. And it's like, wow, well, you know, as I said, you know, you metaphorically just, you know, cut your, throat from ear to ear. Okay, right in front of them. Said, now you're going to have to wait. You know, I think it's a year to reapply. Pretty sure it's a year. You get turned down, get denied, it's like a year before you can reapply again. So, anyway.
Thank you.
You bet, Ed.
All right. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Again, star 2. Folks, if you have a question, or type it in on the Freedoms Radio side. Getting a refresh here. See if we've got any questions pop up on the Freedoms Radio side. Can't believe we don't have any questions.
Hey, Martin, ask your question.
Sure.
Yeah. Can you see the number of participants that are on the line? You are you able to see that?
Let's see here. Yeah, it looks like 85.
Wow. 85. Okay.
Well, speak. Very, very busy. They stay busy, so. Long.
Yeah, do we have background noise here, Martin? I'm gonna. GW, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, good. Yeah, Martin, we've got background noise. Let me check Freedoms Radio real quick to see if there are any other questions there. Just give me a second. No, no questions there. Anyone else have a question? Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Press star 2. Raise your hand. Otherwise, we're going to have an early night tonight. We have, here we go. Nicholas from Arizona. Go ahead. And then we have Charlie after that.
Hi, can you hear me?
Perfect.
I can hear you.
I was just wondering if there's a process or something that could be put in motion to help facilitate, because you're talking about how the travel card or the passport or correcting the status can, you know, be looked up. And I was just wondering if there's something that can help facilitate that when, you know, the courts or whatever official doesn't want to or refuses to, regardless of, you know, attitude or any other factors.
You know, there's people that are talking about how to do that, and I believe there's a gentleman that is on, that has been on the line a couple, you know, quite a number of times, actually, that has talked about that, and he is trying to perfect the process to get that done. And so, Michael, I don't know if you've looked that over and want to help anybody else to use that.
Repeat the question, please, specifically.
Okay. Nicholas asked. Go ahead, Nicholas.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm asking, is there a particular process or, you know, some thing that is can be put in motion to help facilitate a willingness to look up the information that is provided, besides, you know, everyone just doing their job and, oh, that's not required, that's not part of the information they need, you know, I'm not going to look at that.
You talking about the courts?
Yeah, or police officers or whoever, whatever official it may be.
We're at this point now, the only thing that they're going to understand is offensiveness on our part. And I'm not talking about being offensive on the side of the road where you're going to get yourself shot. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about filing a federal lawsuit under deprivation of rights under color of law, which my understanding is in process now with you in your particular litigation that you're involved with. The police officers that pulled you over, they're having a federal lawsuit applied against them, I think, like in a week or 10 days, something like that, very soon. The prosecutor, the judge, they're all going to have received fan mail from a process server. You are not going to have the judge that you, when you go back to court, that you have today, because they can't rule once they're have been sued. And when the new judge comes in and the new prosecutor comes in, they're going to be saying, well, why are we here? And they're going to be told, well, you're here because this defendant has sued the prior judge and the prosecutor and the state actors, the law enforcement, for deprivation of rights under color of law. They're not messing around. He's not messing around. Well, isn't he just some yahoo out there on the side of the street, some United States citizen, one of the regular pawns? No, he's not. He's getting help somewhere. And he's doing things right, and we've been sued, so we can't get involved anymore. So what do you think the judge is going to be thinking? What do you think the prosecutor is going to be thinking? That's where it's got to play. That's the only play left.
Yeah, I didn't know if there was any other options for that specific. But.
No, because when you have to deal with unreasonable people, the only thing that they understand is pain. And when I say that, I'm not, again, for all the listening office people on the call, I'm not talking about physical pain. I'm not talking about being a pugilist. I'm not talking about being anything but polite and sweet and sincere. But the paperwork that you deal with is what's causing the pain. And that's deprivation of rights under color of law, whether it's Title 42, Section 1983, 1985, 86, or if it's Title 18, Section 242, whatever it is, criminal or civil, it's going to be gone. It's going to be dealt with. And that's the only thing they're going to understand. And you do that across the country a half a dozen times, and especially with the police officers. Every time that there's a police officer that pulls somebody over and writes them a ticket, they're going to have, within 2 weeks, deprivation of rights under color of law lawsuit. And that copy of that will go in the record prior to even the first hearing. Do you plead guilty, not guilty, or nolo contendere? It won't even get to that. There's too many easy takings for them. They're not going to want to mess with you. Anybody.
All right, thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Martin, you still there?
All right. I've got it. And Charlie in Oklahoma, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Michael, what you read, again, just great information. Is that available to request, or where to find it, et cetera?
Yeah, just send me an email. Well, I know who you – yeah, just send me an email, Charlie.
I will. Thank you. I was looking on Quorum or Quora. I don't see it, but anyway, I did look there. So I will send an email.
All right. Was that it for you, Charlie?
It is. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. As Mr. Edward was saying, we're going to have a usually short call here. Let's go ahead and get those questions in. Mr. Edward, Kent popped up. Shall I go ahead and?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to get you unmuted here, Kent.
okay, all right.
Go ahead, bud. Yes, sir.
Can you hear me all right? I had Murphy earlier today. I tried to reach, get to the conference with him. He's on the call right now. We can try again tomorrow.
I can try. I'll have to see if the other guy's ready. He needs some notice. So the more people that get on the call, it gets more complicated trying to put everybody together. I'll try for sometime tomorrow, and I'll get back to you.
All right.
Greg, I just wanted to make a comment. I don't have any questions tonight. I'm glad to hear that you've made up your mind that you're going to become less frustrated with people who ask you questions and haven't done exactly what you think they might have done or should have done. So I'm pleased to hear that. Thank you.
Okay, so Kent, you actually heard wrong. I'm actually not going to be frustrated with people that screw up the process.
Oh.
That's what I get frustrated with. Yeah. No, I mean, I sometimes get frustrated with people that, asking questions. I have a couple, times with you, and, especially a couple times when you were kind of, situating and positioning me, or asking me questions about Bernie and this process. And I finally, the second time I said, I'm not going to talk about it. Third time I said,
they print one Trump with theirs. Print one, Trump the other one with theirs. Print one and Trump. So they have.
Well, thank you for talking, whoever this is. Print one and Trump?
No, that was just an over excuse. That was a part of a problem. I made a mistake. I unmuted the wrong party.
Okay. That was good. All right.
Okay, so I have one. Thank you for your comments, Greg. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Mike, I have a question I guess should be directed to you. When John is putting these lawsuits together for the students, when you say that a second judge or second prosecutor may not want to get involved, some of these people, they got a lot of chutzpah, and they do get involved. So are these suits being formulated in such a way that it will simply be adding a Jane and John Doe to that so we can add additional people to it?
Well, you can always amend a complaint to include others. In fact, we may even have John Doe.
Well, that's what I was asking. Is that the way you're doing?
Yeah.
Is that the way you're doing it?
Yeah. So that when the second judge is looking at it, they go, I wonder who John Doe is.
Right. There you go. That's what I wanted to clarify. Okay. Thank you very much. I didn't want people to be left thinking that you had to file another lawsuit over again for a couple more people.
No, not at all.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, that clears us up here again, unless I'm not seeing it here. I refreshed. I don't see any more.
Yeah, let me try to draw someone out here, Martin. Jim Z in Great Falls. Would you mind pressing *2? I'd like to talk with you on the open call tonight and just share some of your history with the people on the call regarding your foray into Anna Von Reitz and so forth. If you wouldn't mind, press *2 on your keypad. I won't bring you in.
Can you hear me now? Am I unmuted?
Yes, you are.
Am I? Okay, good. It worked the first time, and you can hear me okay.
Well,
we heard you talking to somebody else about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is unrehearsed here, so, that's the fatal mistake that anybody makes is to start a conversation publicly where you don't know where it's going to go. And I don't know where this is going to go, but I know that Jim Z here reached out to me this week, and he shared with me some things that I would like for him to share with you with regards to his journey prior to contacting me regarding correcting his status. And the reason why is on GW's end, it's one page. It's one page. I mean, there's other stuff associated with it, but it's just one page. Jim, would you mind sharing what you've done so far on your journey to correct your status, please?
Well, I don't know if you just want to go back to Anna Von Wright's, and she's very productive, very prolific, and, you know, she's working hard to do the right thing, but she has a 928 process, and you can find her on AnnaVonWright's.com. It's a pretty complex process. There's a lot of things to record in the courthouse and file. And then she did, and I started doing some of those, and I have an authenticated birth certificate and some other things, copyrighted names, and some of those things I've done back as far as 2002. But she came out with a different process where it's just a one-pager, but you have two witnesses, and it's I can't even remember the name, but it's a declaration of something Act of 7th, oh, here it is, Declaration of the Naturalization Act of July 1779. So it's a one-pager plus two witnesses who you already recorded, and, you know, you basically state out who you believe you are, and you've covered it well as American State National. You know, I studied the Constitution. I had read the Constitution several times, but in about 2015-16, I had some idle time, and I really studied the Constitution. And so, you know, that first article and Section 8, Clause 17, that you've already spoken about tonight, it's the District of Columbia, and the territories is the United States. So when that finally hit me between the eyes, it just kind of, okay, I'm not that guy. I never lived there. I've never gone before a judge to swear an oath to the United States. I was naturalized in Indiana as an American state national. But then, of course, the fraud began a few days later when my actual birth certificate got securitized and monetized. And since then, they've counted me as a slave. So did you get a chance to read that document that I sent you today, Michael?
No, I've been tied up since ways come Sunday, but I just saw that it was, shall we say, prolific. And that's why I was looking for you to share. What I'm looking to try to show the people on the call is that this is a very simple step, but it is, however, it is supported by weekly phone calls. You have my direct contact. Once we get connected, you have my direct contact number, and I take calls all the time. And if I can't take the call, then I respond very quickly. It's about follow-up. It's about understanding. It's getting you to a place where you are so seated in understanding who you are that if and when you ever are before the bench, the gown or gavel, we call them, there's nothing that they can say that's going to intimidate you. We teach you how to be polite, how to be respectful, and how to ask the right questions. On a call this afternoon, I had said, John is the information provider, and I just said, John, would it be appropriate when this defendant is sitting in front, is standing in front of the judge, that he asks the judge, Your Honor, is may I ask a question, please? Go ahead. All right. I've asked for you to recognize my political citizenship status, and you keep glossing it over. Would that have the appearance to anyone else that you are depriving me of my rights under color of law? I've asked you for Sixth Amendment counsel, and you don't like the person I've put forth because they're not a member of the state bar.
Anything they can see.
He doesn't say anything about being a member of the state bar. So would is what you're doing, is your decision, does it have the appearance of depriving me of my rights under color of law? You say something like that, they're going to be thinking, what does this guy know? Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you want to get into details of the papers that I sent, but it basically comes down, I had an old credit card thing that I fought, and it wasn't very much money, but it's been like 15 years, and they got it up to 8,000, and they have to refile every however many years, 3 or 4 years, to renew a lien, but I don't have anything they can get. But this time around, I decided I just went full out challenging jurisdiction of the court. And based on myself as a man, an American state national, and never been a surety for the name they use or, accommodating partner or party, I've never taken responsibility for that name, but they keep giving it to me. And when I challenged jurisdiction, it was a multi-page thing with all the sites, case sites. They don't have a discretion about her in jurisdiction. She ignored it. She went to a ruling. Didn't have a hearing, nothing. So the other part of it is I filed a judicial complaint in the state. And I had my address without the United States, and the secretary honored that. And by the final thing, she reverted to the corporate address and zip code, and the committee of the Supreme Court, the Judicial Review Committee, they ruled that I'm their slave. They didn't say it in those terms, but there was no basis for an appeal on that jurisdiction violation. So that's it. So
The game's not over.
No, it isn't. But I'm limited in how I can fight. But
no, I know. Well, preferably these limitations will be lifted very, very shortly.
I believe they will be. And at that point, I'm still going to need your help. I hope you guys are around.
I'm lining it up.
Yes, I know.
As soon as I come back from my 6 months in Tahiti. I'm teasing. Teasing.
Yeah, so, well, anyway, yeah, thank you, and I think that's about all I can add.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. People are waking up. I mean, it's just all over. Even a year ago, I wasn't so optimistic, but people are coming out of it.
Yeah.
So, when is the tipping point? I don't know. Well, thank you, Michael.
In your case, it's going to take full-on litigation, just like in Nicholas. Thank you, Jim. Press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen. Otherwise, we're going to be saying goodnight. Martin, go ahead.
All right. Star 2 on your keypad, folks. If you have a question or type it in on the Freedoms Radio side, this will probably be our last go-around. If we don't have any questions pop up, then we'll bid our very, very busy speaker a good evening. Stall here just another couple moments. Star 2 on your keypad if you have a question. Refresh here again on the Freedoms Radio. Yeah, I believe that's going to do it.
All right, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to remind you tomorrow night to return with Brother John. Prayerfully, we'll have him here. He has a week-long symposium that he is actually hosting, but we should have him tomorrow night as well. And then, of course, Wednesday is Mr. Slevin's Most Unique LLC. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the The moderator has left the conference. Thank you. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.